Good morning. Good morning. Am I on? Can you guys hear me? Yes? Okay, great. All right. Well, man, we're having a beautiful, beautiful morning, which is so nice to see after the week we've had. Man, it seems like we've had three seasons all in the same week, because we had, winter on Monday, spring on Thursday, and yesterday was summer. And I don't get how we go from winter, and then 5 days later, summer. Winter, summer. But, I mean, even for us, even for Ohio, that's kind of crazy. But whatever it takes to get to mornings like this, I'll take it. So hopefully we can stay here. All right, speaking of summer, before we get started today, just wanted to give another quick reminder about the youth mission trip that is going to be taking place this July. So several weeks ago, made an announcement that the youth group will be going to Myrtle Beach this summer for the mission trip, and they're going to be working to restore homes that are in need, people who are in need, as well as help run a vacation Bible school. And then also work on what God is doing in their hearts. And it's amazing because they come back changed every year, and they really come back with such a fire for the Lord. So it's really fun. But today I just wanted to give a reminder that, you know, there's still time, there's still opportunity for you to partner with the youth in this. They're still pretty far off from meeting their goal of where they need to be right now. So if you've decided that you would like to give to help as many youth go on this trip as possible, that there is a need there. And you can do so by giving online, oldfortchurch.com. You can write a check to the church and designate that. You can give cash and put that in the offering boxes. So however you decide. But along with the financial need, the youth are also really in need of prayer for this trip. So please pray for their hearts to be prepared for what the Lord has in store for them, for safety, and just that God would meet every need. And if you have any questions about that, please be sure to ask, and I'd be happy to help there. All right, well, we are looking forward to sharing one final message here in the book of John, in our series called According to John that we started all the way back in February. And February was a time where there was snow on the ground, and it reminds me of Monday, and there's lots of snow on the ground. I'm still stuck on that. But yeah, so all the way back in February, and now we are at the final message for this series. And this, you know, as we're finishing up John's Gospel, this is chapter 21. Last week on Easter, Mark preached on chapter 20, where we took a look at Mary Magdalene discovering the empty tomb, Jesus appearing to her, then appearing to the disciples, and then Jesus appearing to Thomas. And, you know, there's some closure there from the Gospel, and we have some closure in chapter 20, but we have chapter 21, which is a whole nother chapter, which kind of ties up some loose ends. And, you know, most importantly, it ties up some loose ends with Peter. And that's who we are going to be focusing on this week. We're going to take a look at his story and really see that come to light here in this last chapter. And as we look at his life, we are going to look at four crucial moments that kind of define him, and they all take place in about a week, and we're going to take a look at what God is doing there. So before we take a look at the text, to better understand what we are going to be talking about in this last chapter, we first need to learn more about Peter and his story and his relationship with Jesus, so we can kind of get the whole picture. The first thing we need to know is that Peter's birth name is actually not Peter. It's Simon, son of John. And he's not given the name Peter until Matthew chapter 16:18, when Jesus tells him, "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. So Peter is the name that Jesus gives him, which in Greek is Petros, which comes from the Greek word Petra, which means rock or stone, because Jesus said, "You are the rock on which I will build my church." So Jesus called him this because rock is, of course, used for a sturdy or strong foundation. And it's kind of fun when you think about, you know, how there are different names that are used for different personalities, different things that people are known by. You're kind of given a nickname, and that's who you are. And I think this is common in sports as well. There's actually a player on the Cleveland Browns. He's a defensive back. His name is Greedy Williams. And Greedy is not his birth name. It's his nickname. His actual name is Andreas. But it's the nickname that he's known by. And I think it was his aunt that gave him the name Greedy when he was a baby. And it just kind of stuck because he started playing football. And at his position, you want to be greedy to intercept the football. And it just kind of stuck, and it really worked well. So that's another nickname that kind of relates to your profession, what you do. So with Peter, Petros is Greek for the name Peter, and that's the language that's used in the New Testament. The manuscripts are all in Greek. That's what it was written in. But Greek was actually not the most common language that was spoken back at that time. The common language that was spoken between Jesus and his disciples was probably Aramaic. So you have to take the Greek word of Petros and then translate it to Aramaic. So the original name that Jesus used to when he changed Simon's name to Peter was actually Kepha. And if you've seen the movie Passion of the Christ, Peter or Jesus calls Peter this name using the Aramaic, since they use the original language. By the way, Jesus' name is Yeshua in Aramaic. So a couple fun things there. Now, before we get into more about what is going to happen with Peter, we need to take a look at more about what he is like. So a couple weeks ago, Mark was talking about the arrest of Jesus and what took place there. You know, the temple guards of the high priest came to arrest Jesus in the garden, and then we began to really see the character of Peter start to really unfold when push came to shove. And we saw that Peter has a big heart, but he sometimes forgets the consequences of his own actions. But more than that, what happened next was we learned that Peter was a protector. And then it says in John chapter 18, 10 and 11, it says, "Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So the soldiers of the temple guards, they're led by Judas to the garden. They begin to arrest Jesus. And then what does Peter do? He takes out sword. Some people think it was like a large fishing knife, whatever it was, but he used it to protect Jesus. And then he strikes Malchus in the ear. Now, I don't know if Peter was actually trying to kill him, or maybe he was really trying to take off his ear, or he missed, or whatever happened, because it was dark out. They were in the garden, not a lot of light. We don't know exactly what happened, but we do know that Peter did cut off Malchus's ear. So from those actions and others leading up to this point in the gospel, we know that Peter is a protector. You know, he is bold. He is courageous. Usually we'll get to that. He's quick to action, has a big heart. But one knock against him is he often forgets, or he doesn't fully understand the goal of what Jesus is trying to accomplish, because he's so quick to speak. And even though they were sometimes on different pages, Jesus never gave up on Peter. And we'll talk about that later too. So you could say that Peter was sometimes of full heart and half mind, which is just a saying that he is heart-led. He's led by his heart. And he let that kind of get in the way sometimes. And with that mentality, I was thinking, you know, if Peter was around today, he'd probably be a good football player. More specifically, he'd be a good offensive lineman. Because if you know a few things about football, you know that offensive linemen, they're the biggest guys on the entire team. Peter was probably a bigger guy, but not quite as big as the offensive linemen today in the NFL. I mean, those guys are like up to 6'8", you know, 350-plus pounds. I mean, Peter wasn't that big. But these guys, they're like gentle giants because they're both huge and athletic, but they also have to have the heart and the courage to make sure no one gets past them on the defense so that those guys get to the quarterback. So when the ball is hiked, you know, they block. And especially on passing plays, the offensive linemen, they're constantly thinking, hey, if you want to get to my quarterback, you're going to have to go through me first. You know, they're the protectors. And Peter was kind of this way. He was a protector who kind of made impulsive mistakes. You know, he may have been thinking, you know, if you want to go through Jesus, you got to go through me first. You know, he did everything he could to protect the Lord through his actions, and sometimes the actions of his heart were unnecessary. So we know that Peter had in some ways maybe more courage than the rest of the disciples, but only Jesus could have predicted what was going to happen next. Now, so they're in the garden. Jesus heals Malchus's ear. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Jesus is arrested, taken on trial from the high priest. Now we know this trial was unfair, and they're starting to hit Jesus. They're starting to mock him. Peter is following along. He is watching this from a distance. He is seeing what's going to take place. And, you know, we don't know if he's thinking, you know, maybe I should step in again. Maybe I should, you know, find my sword and do what I can. But, you know, maybe he remembers, hey, Jesus said, you know, no need to use the sword. So he stays back, and he's watching all of this unfold. And as this is going on, you know, Peter probably also forgot earlier that day that he would never disown Jesus. And as easy as it was for him to say that, we're going to find out next, it was much harder for him to do. And we're finding out that Peter was about to mess up. And this is well documented in Mark 14, 29 and 31, when earlier that night, Peter said boldly to Jesus, "Even if all fall away, I will not." Then Jesus answers, "Truly I tell you, today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And the other disciples did the same. Now, the word I would use here for Peter would be whoops. Because he says, "Even if I had to die with you," almost as if he is telling Jesus that he knew better than him. Yeah, usually not a good idea to tell Jesus that you know better than him, because we're going to find out next that Jesus was, of course, right. So Peter's in the temple courtyard, watching from a distance. He's warming himself by, they call it a charcoal fire. That's important for later. We'll talk about that. And then suddenly the accusers start coming. The first accuser is a girl, a woman, comes up to him, says, "Hey, you're one of the followers of Jesus. You're with that guy on trial, aren't you?" Peter says, "Nope, I don't know him. Nope." Then later, there's a second accuser. "Hey, aren't you one of Jesus' disciples?" Peter, "No, I'm not." Third accuser, "No, you are. You're one of Jesus' disciples. I saw you with him. You're from Galilee, just like him." Then Peter, at this point, he's starting to get angry. "No, I have never seen that man in my life. I don't know him." Now, at this point, he's even cursing at these people. And then, just then, a rooster crows. And not only that, but somehow through all the chaos and the madness that's taking place this moment with the trial and the accusations, Jesus is able to look directly at Peter. And it was at that moment that Peter remembered that Jesus had told him earlier that day that he would disown him three times. And with that, Peter runs. He runs off and he weeps. Now, I couldn't imagine the level of shame and guilt that Peter was feeling at that time. And we all know it can be easy to say stupid stuff that we don't mean when we are scared, really scared, threatened, you know, feel like everything is on the line. But that's no excuse, because Peter, someone who had all the courage in the world, at the most crucial time, at a defining moment, he caved in. And like those offensive linemen, when they're being brave and bold and they're doing their job, it's great. But when they commit a holding penalty that costs their team 10 yards or 15 yards at a really crucial moment in the game, you know, the fact that they're the biggest guys on the field doesn't really mean quite as much as it used to. You know, suddenly the biggest guys now look like the smallest guys on the team. And I'm sure that's kind of how Peter felt that way. And the thing that I like most about this story is that even though it's sad that Peter denies Jesus, the interesting thing is that Jesus knew all along this was going to happen. He knew it. He even predicted it, that Peter was going to deny him, run away, and practically everyone was going to run away and hide at this time. And nothing surprises our God. And honestly, with everything that was going on that day, with everything that Jesus had to go through, you know, there were much bigger fish that needed to be fried that weekend. No pun intended, since Peter was a fisherman. But there are some bigger things that were going on, and so it didn't surprise Jesus. And also, Jesus wasn't worried either, because he knew that this is far from the end of Peter's story. You know, Jesus tells us that we learn later that Jesus still has a plan for Peter. And that's what we're going to take a look at next. And I think that God orchestrates things on our lives that we simply don't understand at first to reveal something bigger to us later. Or at least we'll see that God can use our mistakes for something for his good later. And we actually see this backed up in Scripture after Jesus' resurrection. Now, next thing I want to do is take a look at a couple things that took place after Jesus' resurrection that later will kind of relate to what we're talking about here with Peter. So I once heard a pastor say that Jesus, in his loving personality, after he had risen from the grave and started appearing to the disciples around Jerusalem, he had a little bit of fun with those he came in contact with. Now, I'm not sure I'd put it that way, but when he spelled it out, the pastor was kind of right. And I'll explain here in a moment, because Jesus wasn't, you know, he wasn't being mean to his friends, but he did make them think a little bit longer. So here's an example. So think about Mary Magdalene. Last week when we were talking at Easter, when she finds Jesus' tomb is empty, she starts crying. And she thinks, the reason she's crying, someone stole Jesus' body. And she's kind of confused. And then she sees two angels there. She's still crying. And then she turns and sees, you know, there's someone behind her. She has no clue who it is. It is Jesus, but she doesn't know. And the funny thing is, Jesus doesn't reveal himself to her right away. You know, it seems like there's some time for a dramatic effect. You know, he could have, if he wanted to, you know, just appeared in front of her, hey Mary, it's me. There's no need to cry anymore. But instead, you know, he stays in the back, and he actually has a mini conversation with her about himself. You know, he's like asking her questions, like, why are you crying? It's a rhetorical question. He knows why she's crying. Then he asks her right after who she's looking for. He knows that she's looking for him. And then she's so confused, and you know, she's talking with him, and she thinks it's the gardener, and that just for a brief second until Jesus says Mary, and says her name, and then she knows that it's him. But there's some other moments kind of like this after Jesus has risen, where he's kind of, you know, having some fun with some of these people. And this one's interesting. So the road to Emmaus is a great story. I'm gonna paraphrase it here real quick just to get through it a little bit quicker. So there's two followers of Jesus, and you know they're walking on the road to Emmaus, and they're talking to each other, and they're talking about everything that had happened with Jesus just in the past few days with his trial and death, and they're trying to take this all in and figure out what's going on. And then suddenly Jesus appears and starts walking with them, and these guys have no idea that it's Jesus. So then Jesus starts asking them, "Hey, what are you guys talking about?" And and kind of picture Jesus saying, like, what's going on here? I'd like to hear about it, even though he knows. And they say to him, "Are you the only guy in Jerusalem that doesn't know about these things?" And then this next part is actually funny because Jesus says, "What things?" He's kind of provoked. What is it? So these two men start to explain to Jesus, "Okay, well, a few days ago, there's this guy named Jesus. He was sentenced in front of everyone. He was crucified. He was put in a tomb. And, we thought he was going to be the one to save us all. But now we're not so sure. But we can tell you that, some of our friends went to his tomb earlier this day, and the tomb is empty. So there's that. But that's all we know right now." And Jesus is listening to all this, and I'm sure he's smiling, and he responds with a quick little, "Well, it sounds like you guys haven't really been listening to the prophets very closely, and Jesus wants to say, and you haven't been listening to me very closely, because if you had, you would know that the Messiah was going to have to suffer like this for his glory before he returned." And then Jesus went ahead and he enlightened them on everything that the prophets had said and set them straight. They still didn't know it's him. So now they're all walking along, and the men reach their stop on this road, and they say to Jesus, "Hey, it's getting late. Why don't you come have dinner with us?" And so Jesus agrees, and they get to where they're going, or they get to the part of the meal where they were going to bless the meal, and Jesus says he'll bless the meal, and then just before, Jesus says, "Hey, surprise, it was me the whole time." And he reveals himself to these guys, and then he disappears. And the two men, kind of look at each other like, what just happened? And they're kind of freaking out. And then they run the 7 miles back to Jerusalem from Emmaus in the dark, and they find the 11 disciples, and they tell them about everything that happened. And then, to top it all off, as they're explaining this story, Jesus, comes through the wall into the room with all the disciples as this is going on, and he tries not to scare them by saying, "Peace be with you." And then they're still freaking out, but then, Jesus tells them, "I'm not a ghost, and, you can relax," and then he starts having fish with them. So there's that story. So yeah, we start to see this trend that, Jesus starts showing up in ways that no one ever expected, and not even his closest friends. So what does all this have to do with Peter? Well, Jesus was about to appear to him and others one more time in this book in a way that they would have never thought that Jesus would reveal himself this way, just like Mary did it, just like the two men on the road to Emmaus. So at the beginning of the final chapter of John, Peter says, "I'm going out fishing." And then 6 disciples say, "Hey, we're going with you." So they go out, they go fishing all night, catch nothing. And now this story starts to sound a little bit familiar. And what happens next in John 21, 4 through 8, this part is amazing. It says, "Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize it was Jesus. He called out to them, 'Friends, haven't you any fish?' 'No,' they answered. He said, 'Throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some.' When they did, they were unable to haul the net because the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. So the disciples were out on the boat in the morning. It was early, probably still fairly dark out, and it says the man on the shore was about 100 yards off. So that tells us there's a good chance he was far enough away that they could hear his voice if he was yelling, but probably not make out his face. So they didn't know. So, but we do know in the book of John where it says, the disciple whom Jesus loved was probably John himself. So John says to Peter, "Hey, it's the Lord." And I'm sure Peter, at the same time, he realized that. And before John could even finish the sentence, Peter was already preparing to jump off the boat and swim to shore to meet Jesus. Now, I'm not sure why he put on his outer garment before he jumped out of the boat, but we know that he jumped in quick. And I've always wondered why it was just Peter who jumped out of the boat to meet Jesus and not all the other disciples behind him. But one reason might have been because he was the most excited to see Jesus. But I think another reason is that there is something deeper going on. There is something else happening here. And this is what I think it is. I think it's possible that this entire meeting of Jesus appearing for the third time to the disciples was mostly for Peter. And Jesus was already sending messages to him all the way from the shoreline. How? Well, Jesus seems to be connecting the part where he first called Peter way back in Luke chapter 5. This is what it says in Luke 5 through 7. It says, "Simon answered, 'Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything.'" Sounds familiar. "But because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners to come in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. So already we have almost the same story with a huge number of fish that were caught when Jesus first called Peter to where we are now in the last chapter of John. And I think there is one extra linking thing that some scholars say is a connection to Peter from the last chapter of John. Remember earlier when I had said, remember that, you know, before Peter denied Jesus three times, Peter was warming himself by a charcoal fire. And the connection there is that Jesus, when he was waiting for Peter and the other disciples on the shore, he actually already had a charcoal fire going. And that was already there. So that's kind of a small thing, but maybe worth noting as a part of the bigger story here. Now, in the wake of Peter's greatest failure, I think that Jesus was kind of recreating the miracle that he used to first call Peter to be his disciple, to tell him something else, to tell him that they needed to talk, and also to tell him that, hey, the relationship is still open. I'm not here to rebuke you. And maybe that's why John looks right at Peter when he says, "It's the Lord." He looks right at Peter first. Maybe John realized, you know, this is Peter's time to be reinstated. Because, you know, it wasn't for Nathanael. It wasn't Nathanael who was sitting under the fig tree when God called him. It wasn't Matthew in the tax collector booth when Jesus called him out of there. This is, you know, Peter's fishing boat moment for a second time. And it's like John is saying, he's calling you, Peter. He came back to tell you something. Go. We're right behind you. You know, he's giving you another chance. And I think it's awesome that we serve a God of second chances. And we know that because Jesus clearly didn't meet with the disciples a third time just to give them a bunch of fish, just to have breakfast with them that morning. There was something more important that needed to take place. And we're going to read about that next as we learn that all of this had been leading up to Peter, who was not going to be rebuked by Jesus, but he was going to be reinstated. So let's read next what it says in John 21, 15 through 19. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Now, there's obviously a lot to unpack here. And right off the bat, you'll notice that, you know, this was not the rebuke of Peter. It was a reinstatement, and it was a serious conversation. Secondly, we know that in the Greek manuscripts and translations, there are different words that are used compared to our English language, especially for the word of love, when Jesus, you know, is asking Peter if he loves him. Now, we could get into the, you know, well, Jesus used, you know, this Greek word here of brotherly love, for it's philia, and then Peter replied with agape love or unconditional love here. I'm not going to get into that today for a couple of reasons. One, it's kind of confusing. And secondly, scholars say that it might be uncertain whether that distinction of the different Greek words, if there was an intentional meaning there, if they, you know, really meant to use those different types of love. But I think the main takeaway is that Jesus was still asking Peter if he loved him, and he does so three times. Now, with that part out of the way, remember that it has now been several days after Peter had denied Jesus, so, you know, Peter is, you know, no longer running away, he's no longer weeping, that part's over, you know, because we know he ran to the tomb on Easter Sunday as fast as he could. He swam as fast as he could to Jesus, jumped out of the boat. So, you know, it appears that he's worked through that. Peter knew that there was no reason to be scared of Jesus. So that part is well documented. But clearly there's something important that Jesus needed to say, needed to address, without having to directly mention Peter's denial. And this is how he did it, by asking three times in a row if he loved him. Now, we also know that, you know, at the start of this conversation, it's going to be serious because Jesus uses Peter's full name and not his nickname of Peter. He calls him Simon, son of John, his full name. You know, because normally Jesus is using, he'll say Peter when he's referring to Peter, the name he gave him, but not this time. So he says, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And though biblical scholars are somewhat kind of divided about what the "these" means, I think most people believe that Jesus was saying, "Do you love me more than these other disciples love me?" Now that might be in reference to when Peter said earlier, "Even if all others fall away, Lord, I will not." So now Jesus has the chance to bring this to light, as Peter clearly went back on his word and broke that promise. Now, regardless if that's what Jesus was referring to, I couldn't imagine the weight of that question. I bet for Peter, it began to feel like kind of a punch to the gut. And I'd love to know Peter's facial expression during all this. But we know that he each time responds, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." So Jesus tells him, "Feed my lambs." Now, what does feed my lambs mean? Is Peter supposed to stop fishing and start a farm? No. We know that Jesus talks in parables. And we know that Jesus is the good shepherd. And this was never meant for actual sheep for him to look after. In fact, he actually was talking about people, his people. And those who knew him and trust him know his voice, just like sheep do. And the way I understand it, the sheep are his people that will become the church. But Jesus said to feed them. Is Peter supposed to just give out food? No, of course not. To feed lambs is a way to take care of them. Because Jesus asked him again, "Simon, son of John," using his full name again, "do you love me?" Peter says, "Yes." And this time Jesus says, "Take care of my sheep." Now I wonder at this point if Peter is wondering, why did Jesus just ask me the same thing twice? Then finally the third time, Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me?" And this is the one that it says hurt, because it was three times in a row. And Peter says, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And then Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." Now, why did Jesus use minor variances about, feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep? I'm not sure. But we can assume that the message that he was sending to Peter was the same for all three. And he's saying to Peter, "Take care of my people, lead my church as I lead you." And we also know that there is for sure a connection about Jesus asking Peter three times if he loves him to reaffirm the three times that Peter had denied him. And that was another connection to something that had happened earlier with Peter, though this one was more obvious and at a more serious moment. Now, after knowing all of Peter's story, if Jesus wanted to shame Peter, he would point backwards to the incident of the denial and say, "Hey, remember what you did? Look what you did. How could you? I even warned you," and then leave it at that. But no, this is not Jesus' plan. It appears that that was never even a thought. Instead, Jesus points him forward to the future. Peter has already probably put himself through enough anyways with embarrassment and shame, so that wouldn't have solved anything. So Jesus points him to the future. But what did need to happen was that Peter needed to personally get closure from Jesus if he was going to lead his church to be recommissioned as the foundation of the church and prepare him for gospel service. Now, if you've ever messed up or wronged someone and then confessed it to them, and in turn been genuinely forgiven, you kind of get it. You probably got a small taste of what Peter got to experience from Jesus. I remember one time when I was in my 20s, I had made a mistake, and I had really needed to confess it to a friend of mine. I remember making a call to him and being really nervous about what he was going to say, telling him what I'd done and feeling bad about it. And I'll never forget his voice on the phone as I was explaining this to him. I could hardly finish my last sentence, and he said with a kind voice, he said, "You're already forgiven, man." And he never brought it up again, and it was literally in the past. It was gone. And I could kind of see, God's hand in that. And it was really cool to see God take what was a pretty tough moment for me and be able to turn it into something good. And I think that's what we saw with what happened to Peter on a much larger scale. Because regardless of what the world may tell you, that you only have so many chances in life, you only get one shot, if you blow it, you're done. then you don't get any more chances. We, as followers of Jesus, we know that we serve a God of not just first chances, second chances, third chances, but many, many, many chances. And we need to remember to give others second chances, just like Jesus is constantly giving us. Jesus didn't give up on Peter, and he's not giving up on us. Jesus alone can forgive sins and strengthen the faith of those who love him. And we know that Peter loved Jesus a lot. And I'm sure if Peter were standing here today, he would not want to be remembered as the guy who denied Jesus three times. But he was the guy who loved Jesus with his whole heart, was brave, and loved God's people the best he could. He was a leader. Because when, you know, we think it's all over, we messed up to the point where we could never recover, with Jesus, that's not true. If you have breath in your lungs, you have a second chance if you want it. Just like that first song that we sang today. If I'm not dead, then you're not done. And I love that. If you have the courage to face the music and admit your mistake and confess your sin to the Lord, you're right where God wants you. Because ultimately, it doesn't matter what we think of ourselves, what others think of us. It matters what God thinks of us and what his word says. And what his word says is, who the Son sets free is free indeed. Let's pray. Jesus, I just thank you for loving us. I thank you for giving us second chances. God, we can be constantly tricked by this world, thinking that there's no more chances left. Thinking that when we miss opportunities, that's it for us. But God, you came to give us second chances. You came to love us. You came to give us open arms when we're hurting, when we're crushed. God, I just ask that you help us to remember who you are and who you say you are and who you say that we are. God, that we are children of you. We are children of the King. And that there is nothing else in this world that can ever take that. And there is nothing else in this world that is more important than that. God, we thank you for who you are and how you love us. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a child of God. I am who you say I am. I was thinking, as I was kind of preparing this message with Peter and the reinstatement, I was thinking about the story of the prodigal son that Jesus tells, and how, you know, the younger son denies his father and leaves and runs away, and then comes crawling back, and the father is there with open arms to just love him, no matter what happened. And then I was thinking about Peter and how he denied Jesus and comes back, jumps off the boat, swims to him as fast as he can, and Jesus is waiting there for him with breakfast. And it's amazing to see how our God always receives us back with open arms. And Jesus told the story of the prodigal son, and then the thing with Peter happened. And so Jesus is doing what he said he would do. And he welcomes us back in every single time. And it's just amazing that we serve a God of second chances. So as you go this week, just remember to give someone a second chance, as Jesus has given you. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next week.